Hello, listeners, and welcome to the first episode of Notes and Checks. This mini-arc is called The Age of Digital Sale, When Shipping Turns Ugly, and it's going to be an examination of fandom culture, mob mentality, and toxic shipping. A little background for those of you who may not be as submerged into fandom lingo. There's always some room for interpretation when it comes to slang, so for the purposes of this show, the word shipping describes the phenomenon of pairing up two or more characters and making them a relationship in fan content, or simply in fan interactions. This could be fan art, fan fiction, fan vids, or even fan roleplay. On its own, shipping really is one of the core components of early fandom. It was through and through the lack of these relationships in the source material that such things as the Star Trek designs first started. Fans felt a lack of something and wanted to fill that lack with things they themselves could create. In this case, usually it was a lack of LGBTQA content or a healthy lack of heterosexual content. It was a reactionary effort from looking at the source material and finding it, well, lacking. In this connotation, you can look at things that are people are shipping and find what it is about the stories we currently tell that are still lacking. For example, in shows that have very few female leads or developed characters, but many homoerotic male leads and developed characters, you'll see a large fandom space for M/M content or simply male-loving male content. Some of the original big fandom ships are indicative of this, for example, Kirk and Spock. Two characters that led a well-loved show, that have close bonds together, that have falling outs and conflicts, that save each other and have homoerotic moments on the show. It's not hard to see why people would want that to become more explicit. Our brains are not wired for subtext. We want confirmation, the resolution of a story. We want our identities to be validated and our fantasies to be fed. And in a climate where we knew we would not get anything but subtext because culture had not progressed enough for LGBTQA content to be normalized or celebrated, we had to make it ourselves. Now, I am lingering on the LGBTQA side of things simply because that is what I know best, but it wasn't the only kind of shipping, even at the start. People will be drawn to certain relationships either because they identify with them, they fantasize about them, or even simply because they think two characters are hot. It can also come from a desire to see characters grow or evolve, especially in media where that character is maybe not treated with the same amount of detail as others. This brings about a good point. Not all shipping is about identity or source material. Some shipping has very little to do with the perceived lack of representation. It becomes more about the fantasy. A good example of this is Supernatural, a show about two brothers fighting the forces of evil. The two main ships are between one of the brothers, Dean, and a character that shows up later in the season, Castiel, but that sticks around and has just as much development. The other main is between the two brothers. Why this is that people are drawn to it, I don't feel equipped to really answer, but I can give a few guesses as to why, in part, this incestuous relationship has found its audience. First, the lack of consistent, well-written women make it that the characters you bond with are most likely the two male leads. There's of course side characters, but on a whole, they too are mostly male, and they do not have time to develop bonds with them, or for the main character to develop bonds with them. The only close bonds you do see that last and not tragically ended by the show's writers because conflict sells a story are between the two brothers and between the brother and the character I mentioned earlier. The third part, which I think has drawn in its fair share of shippers, is the idea of the taboo. Of course, in regular media, having an incestuous relationship between your two main male leads would be a very risky concept. Indeed, you probably wouldn't want to do it, not only because it would make most of your mainstream audience recoil, but because incest in real life is rather abusive and unhealthy. As well, it brings about a few old-school prejudices of LGBTQA people and their supposed predatory nature. Not really a good look for any show unless it's trying to sell its content purely through shock value. Looking at you, Game of Thrones. Fantasy isn't necessarily things we actually want to see in our mainstream media. For example, the shipping of two characters just to explore how horrible they would be for each other, while still shipping is not necessarily a reaction to the lack in the source material. And this is where we come to an interesting subject. While some shipping comes from a lack of content and some shipping comes from personal exploration or fantasies, some shipping has evolved to become its own social currency. What I mean by that is that the fandom culture has evolved to become its own society in some cases. People fight for legitimacy, for relevancy, and for followers and friends. Everyone wants to be a big name fan, to be seen, to have the ear of your peers and get the clicks and notifications on your social media. This sort of drive has also lent itself to shipping being seen as something you use to make yourself look better. Whether it's shipping wars where two parts of the fandom will fight for which ship is better, or whether it's purity wars where the fans will dictate and gatekeep which ships are valid and healthy. Shipping no longer becomes about the characters, or the fantasy, or the lack of content. It becomes a badge, a tagline, an identity. For those who identify so strongly with a character or ship, there's two types. The first are kins. Kins are people who identify so strongly that they themselves think they are that character. It has a spectrum, like most things, where on one end you have people playfully role-playing or obsessing, and on the other hand, you have people who become so obsessed that it interferes with their mental health. They cannot handle the idea of others who are also kin with their character, because it is seen as a doppelganger or a fake. Anything that interferes with their interpretation of the character becomes an attack on them. These fans are, on a whole, pretty unhealthy. The other type are stans. Now, stan has an interesting history that a lot of fans don't realize or otherwise just gloss over. It comes originally from an Eminem song about a fan named Stan that becomes so obsessed that he writes these unhealthy, creepy letters to the rapper, and it is not a positive name. And yet it has seeped into our lingo to represent any sort of fan love. You're a fan of Beyoncé? Maybe you stan her. You really see this in the K-pop fandom, where people will post Stan Luna or Stan BTS on unrelated posts, sometimes even on things that are completely inappropriate, like the notice of someone's death. It becomes a calling card, an identity, a way to find like-minded individuals. And yet, it is a sign of obsessive fandom, usually to the detriment of both the fan and whatever it is that they stan. Now, where does this relate to shipping? Well, both of these types of fans are vocal and active in shipping communities. A lot of times, if you kin or stan someone, you also have a preferred ship for them. And unlike other fans or shippers, there's a good likelihood that you have obsessive or intense ideas of what that character deserves or would like, what they act like, what their personality is, even if it's not fitting with the source material. These characters become less borrowed characters that fans are playing with, and are instead co-opted by the fans so that they feel like they have agency and control over them. So, say you have a favorite character and you really think they would go well with this other character. Well, you will probably obsessively look for any hint in the source material for this to be validated. You might even make things up or frame things in such a way that they could be interpreted this way. Most people, when deviated from the source material, or canon as it's called, make what we call headcanons. These are non-canonical ideas or traits and can a lot of times elevate our relationship with characters. Most authors, after all, won't go into details of our favorite character's Starbucks order, for example. But sometimes, if a fan is a super fan, or a kin, or a stan, these becomes less headcanons and more irrefutable fact to that fan, which brings about some obvious conflict. Going back to that example with your favorite character, you've developed your biases, your headcanons, your ships. You're obsessively looking for validation, and when that validation doesn't come, or worse, is directly refuted, you become defensive, aggressive, hurt. Maybe you join a shipping war, or you write the content creator a nasty message saying how they have done the character disservice or that you are a horrible person. Maybe you write a long analysis on why your point of view is more correct and why other people should agree with you. Some of these reactions are less unhealthy than others, but they are reactions directly associated with the idea of ownership. The fan is no longer the fan is the owner of the character. We only have to look at the drama surrounding the last Game of Thrones to see this in action. Of course, this was not in reaction to shipping, but it was in reaction to perceived ownership over characters and story. Here's perhaps a lesser-known, but more directly relatable incident. Age of Voltron is an animated story aimed at younger demographics, but enjoyed by a lot of adults. It has a nostalgic feeling similar to a lot of older sci-fi animated series, partly because it's a reboot. It also has an extremely active shipping community. And a few years ago, it had a particularly dramatic event when a fan snuck into the studio and threatened the creators to leak images of the next season if they did not make a ship canon. This is obviously an extreme reaction to shipping culture, but it did not arrive out of a vacuum. So, what is it about shipping that brings out the obsession in us? Well, to go back to the idea of shipping as a social currency, let us examine a more recent event that's much closer to home, or at least my home. Critical Role is an internet D&D show created by a bunch of nerdy-ass voice actors and is not only insanely fun, purely improv. The show has grown massively in the past years, and the new season has heralded a wave of new fans who are exploring the fandom for the first time. They only recently made a Kickstarter for an animated series, and, well, it blew up. People threw money at this project in droves. Throughout its growth, as all fandoms will have, dramas pop in and out, and controversy arises at the drop of a hat. And although the cast has made major strides in including more and more representation to their show, at the end of the day, it's a group of mostly white, mostly heterosexual friends playing D&D. It cannot really be analyzed through the same lens as traditional media. However, with this new growth in viewership combined with the cast's uncharacteristic closeness with their fandom, there is a vocal minority that have created tensions in the past couple of months. Ignore my cat meowing. Now, obviously, I'm not going to get into details or call anyone out. I find call it culture to be horrendously broken and useless, and honestly, some of them have points. Instead, I'm going to look at one shipping controversy that has become large from the ashes of these discourses. Travis Willingham and Laura Bailey are married voice actors with a young child. In-game, they play Ford and Jester respectively. From the start, Laura had a goal of seducing her husband. This is a known fact and mentioned in multiple out-of-game videos. Travis, on his end, has a rather more, let's say, disinterested view of in-game relationships. He didn't have one last season, and initially didn't seem enthused by the idea of one. Many fans became enamored with the idea of their characters falling in love. There were definite hints of Laura's character Jester having an interest, but Ford was much more shy. Perhaps they were drawn to the idea of a girl being the pursuer, or simply they liked watching the two married players have fun flirt. Once again, pure honesty, I myself am not a huge fan of the ship, but I mean, I have very little strong emotions about it, and I do not get as involved with shipping in general as a lot of other people do. On the other hand, there was a group that absolutely abhorred the idea of the ship becoming canon. Some of it came from a desire to see a gay male main character, since we had two confirmed LGBTQA women in the main cast, but no men. Some of the group also had their preferred ship, which Ford Jester was not part of. And when it became more and more obvious that this ship might become canon, this group became more and more defensive. They felt attacked, threatened, and they started treating the show similarly to how other fandoms treat theirs. Calls of queerbaiting, of predatory writing, or betrayal were highly circulated. Except for there's a large difference. Once again, Critical Role is improv. There is no writer, no demographic analysis, no marketing. You cannot queerbait something that is not consciously made. And just like how you wouldn't go up to someone playing a D&D game in their basement and say their character is a betrayal to gay men everywhere, you wouldn't do that to someone who is playing D&D on stream. These are characters that the players have ownership over, that are facets of their personality, and that they know more about than we will ever see. But controversy sells, and so does conflict. Humans love drama, and there is nothing so dramatic as a shipping war or shipping drama. Whether you're on the same side or you're interacting with that person negatively, you are still paying attention to them. You are giving them validity by saying that their point of view is worth debating. And if you are on their side, you have now found an ally, someone you feel you can trust, that agrees with you. You amass your own validity outside of the actual content that you are supposedly representing, and where you might not be able to change the world, if you're vocal enough, maybe you'll be able to change one thing about the show you really like, even if you have to push others under the bus to do so. Being big in fandom is all about being noticed, and shipping is an easy, quick way to be noticed. Combine this with kin or stan culture, the idea of shipping purity leading to personal purity, and the way stories and characters are seen as less and less a creator's creation, and you have a pretty toxic stew. Now, Is this purely a shipping issue? Well, no. This is fandom culture being amplified by an easily dissected facet of the community. But it is a strong example of the way mob mentality inches its way into fandom. Shipping isn't toxic because of shipping. Shipping is toxic because of obsession and social currency. Now, this is a very long ramble that honestly probably didn't say a lot, but it is a good basis for my own opinion on the subject and a good springboard for future analysis. Next time, I'll be bringing a few guests to talk about it in more detail with more specific examples and histories. And as it's probably already obvious, this was read from a script, and I'm going off script now to just kind of ramble for a few more minutes to pad the end of this or whatever. Shipping. One thing I will say that I didn't mention, or I mentioned very briefly in this little rant, the idea of shipping purity, and this came up a few times, but I never really went into detail. Shipping purity is the idea that one ship is more valid than the other because of some sort of moral or perceived moral connotation. You'll see this kind of in ships that are maybe not healthy, whether it's you have a much older character with a much younger character, or the two characters in canon have unhealthy scenes or relationships already. It can also be seen as kind of a way of silencing fans that you're not happy with if they create content or interact with other creators in a way that you don't like. One of the easy ways to kind of try to gatekeep or silence groups of people that you don't agree with is to assign some sort of morality on the things they enjoy and say that because they enjoy that thing, then they themselves are no longer moral. I'm not going to really get into whether I believe this is, you know, healthy or not. I think you can make your own decision on that. But I will say that it brings a very stifled feeling to these spaces, these fandom spaces, where the discussion becomes more about whether it is morally okay to enjoy things that are perhaps not healthy in real life or that are not quote-unquote moral in real life, and whether the enjoyment of such things depicts you as a bad person. And these kind of purity wars are interesting not so much for whether or not they are true, but because of the history involved with them. And if any of you have been in fandom spaces for more than, I think, about 7 to 10 years now, I can't remember exactly when the purges happened, but if you were online for a few years now, you more than likely have been part of the LiveJournal purges or the fanfiction.net purges or any of those Wattpad spaces. Like, there's been a ton of them. Tumblr has finally seen its share of that with the Not Safe for Work purges, which is kind of funny because I think Tumblr is where that purity war is kind of started and still to some extent are fabricated. But what you get with purity wars is this idea that to be legitimate in fandom spaces, you must be a pure person. You must have no dark thoughts, no unhealthy desires. You must not explore any of these lesser, kind of more baser urges. And you must only ship the most pure of ships. And if you don't, then you're a horrible person. And what this kind of thinking leads to is, well, one of off that one ship is better than the other, which I don't really think is a healthy idea, but also that it is legitimate to silence these people. And although in previous purges it's always been a question of corporations silencing fandom out of a fear of advertising being pulled back or of legal matters or whatnot, it's become quite obvious that you can't have these fandom spaces and have some sort of policing of them. Self-policing is fine, and I think that everyone should to some extent self-police what sort of content they create, but to police others' works, it gets very messy very quickly. You start talking about, well, you know, who has legitimacy to actually police these things? Are you on the camp that only rape victims can depict rape, well, then are you actually going to ask everybody that has a rape scene in their fiction to revisit their own trauma? Are you going to ask everyone that writes, you know, unhealthy relationships to go through their relationship history for you? Are you going to have to ask everyone that has a disease whether they personally are affected by it? It becomes very difficult to have any sort of real morality policing in these spaces because you cannot guarantee that whoever is policing this themselves are to that level of moral, whatever bar that you set. And you can get very easily, you can get some abusive and predatory relationships out of this, of people taking advantage of these fears and of these purity wars to attempt to silence people they don't like or to attack people they don't like and so on. I have a couple specific examples I'm thinking of, but I won't get into it tonight. So yeah, that also I feel like is very much tied to shipping to a certain extent, because it's all about whether or not it is morally okay to depict unhealthy shipping, and whether people who do create content for these ships, whether they themselves are moral or not. And that's a conversation I feel like you could definitely get really into if you wanted to, and talk about, well, if it's a spectrum, then on what side do you fall? What point do you draw the line in the sand? At what point do you actually, you know, have some sort of policing? And who is good enough to do that policing? But yeah, just something I didn't mention besides on a surface level and wanted to get into a little bit. And I think my time is now up. So thank you, listeners. And I hope wherever you are in fandom sphere, you are healthy and happy and sans drama. Good night and goodbye.